Committee will come to order. Good morning.
Good morning.
This is the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee meeting for March 26th. We have an agenda previously distributed. Are there any changes anyone wants to propose to the agenda? If not, we'll ask that it be accepted as presented by unanimous consent. Hearing no objection, the agenda is accepted. Also before the committee, and having been previously distributed, are the minutes of the January 8th meeting. Are there any corrections, additions, amendments to the minutes? If not, if there's no objection, we will accept the minutes as presented. Hearing no objection, the minutes are accepted as presented. That brings us to operational performance. Mr. Francis, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I will start with the bus on-time performance. Bus on-time performance has been pretty consistent the past couple of months. January, the on-time performance was 74.73%. Next slide. Next slide to show you the mean distance between failure. Was slightly off, about maybe about 100 miles from the goal of 6,500, and you'll see some of the other fleets, CNG, hybrid, have been slightly off, and that was due primarily to a challenging January that we had. It was about 13, 15 rough days of bad weather that caused us some air pressure problems and some engine problems at the same time. Next slide. Rail on-time performance shows you in January that the performance was 94%. Next slide. The rail car door malfunctions out of, as you see, the bottom part of your screen, out of 5,502 trains, we actually had 1.6% of those were involved with a door malfunction, which resulted in less than a percentage of our customers being offloaded. Next slide. During non-peak hours, you see about 2,730 trains resulted in 1.7% of door malfunctions, and again, was very low as far as offload inconvenience to our customers. Escalator elevators, the on-time performance for that for the month of January was 91.9% for the escalators and 98.1% for the elevators, which was actually over our goal. This slide represents, as we've seen before, the escalators with the lowest availability within the last 90 days. The ones that, if you can see, are in blue are the repeaters. I wanted to point out that there's some escalators that we have spoken about, such as the foggy bottom ones, that we are doing some evaluations on those and determining what we're going to do in the future with those escalators at foggy bottom. The elevators for the 90-day period, the same, the blue represents the repeaters. Just wanted to point out, too, there was some numbers, I think, that we changed ahead on replacing the intercoms. We went back and reevaluated those tickets, and those numbers aren't quite as high as they were because we looked at the ticket wrong. We put the number in there, but it wasn't quite the number of hours that it said it was. Metro Access. Metro Access continues to have an increase in ridership somewhere between 18% and 20%. And even though that occurs, it still managed to maintain an on-time performance of 94%. And the trips delivered within the 60-minute window was 99%. That's the end of the presentation, Mr. Chairman.
Questions, Mr. Giancola.
Mr. Francis, thank you for your report. Question on those stations where we had escalators over the years that were canopies were put over. Have we then subsequently seen lesser breakdowns because of the protection offered by the canopies? And where I'm going on this is, and I know we still have several stations, many stations that don't have protection of escalators to the direct elements. You know, Judiciary Square comes to mind, Foggy Bottom comes to mind. And is there a plan long-term to eventually get some canopies or protection devices over those exposed escalators?
What I can get you is the numbers on that, so we can take a look at it, and I'll ask Dave LaCosta sit next to me to come up with that. And then at the same time, I have a next committee, we're going to have a presentation on the escalator elevators, and I'll make sure that I include that in there as well as our future plans for the canopies as well.
Thank you.
Other questions? Mr. Francis, I think one of the striking things about the report this month, or most months for that matter, is that rail performance is pretty high in terms of on time and all that. Bus on time is strikingly lower. The obvious difference being that on the rail system, you control your right-of-way. And in the bus system, you don't have any control of your right-of-way. At some point this year, we're going to be spending some time in this committee talking about bus service and how we can improve the quality of bus service available in the region. And that necessarily is going to involve a lot of talk about right-of-way.
Yes.
But I think that it would be helpful to begin looking at the performance issues, and particularly what contributes to this, you know, the page is it? I guess it's the page 7 in our books, the first slide in your presentation. In terms of what are the causes of those, the various things that push you down from 100 toward, you know, 74.7%, I guess was the most recent one, but generally in the mid, you know, low to mid 70s, because you know, some of those things are generated, as it would be with the rail system. And if you look at this rail system, on-time performance is probably impeded by, I'm guessing, things like, you know, a door problem occurs and that slows you up. Something happens and it slows up other trains. But they're all going to be train-generated issues or something like that. If I looked at it on bus and analyzed it, I'm guessing in some cases it would be because a bus had a problem and that slowed it down. But a lot of it's going to be traffic. Mm-hmm. And if we looked at that, we'd probably say, what does that mean? Well, actually, on this route, there are three choke points, and we lose time during certain hours at this intersection, that intersection, and that intersection. I'm guessing your people would know better, but if you really look at it, you probably can identify some of the major components, and they're going to vary in parts of the region and by route and so on. But if we wanted to know how you could really improve, I mean, there's only so much we can improve rail performance.
Sure.
And it's good that it's high, and we want to get it that little bit higher, but there's a lot of room above where we are on bus. The question is, how much of that is under our immediate control? And seeing as we've been renewing the bus fleet, my guess is that's going to be less and less than it would have been 10 years ago when we had a really old bus fleet and bus breakdowns were a bigger portion of it. And how much of it are things that, you know, on, at first glance are out of our control, but ultimately are in the control of somebody, and that we ought to be, you know, looking at how we coordinate some of those things. Anyway, if you have any reaction to that.
Yes, I do. I guess I would just, the word that you use is what's under our control and what's not. But what my plan is also to come to the committee is, as the committee is well aware of, is that we are right now in the midst of a bus reorganization. And some of the things, Mr. Zimmerman, that you mentioned are what we're addressing in that reorganization. It starts with our bus control center, monitoring what's going on out there with our buses, and we're doing that now. We're monitoring AM, PM peak, middays, early, lates, and so forth. And when we're doing that, we're also communicating that information back to the divisions who are communicating it down to the supervisors, the bus operators, and so forth. But what my plan is in the committees here is to brief the committees on what we're doing each step of the way in this reorganization and how it has the impact on the on-time performance, as well as the mean distance between failures, because as you know, we're also getting our new buses in, and the maintenance guys are really doing a good job in working to maintain that fleet. So I plan on kind of taking us through, I guess you can call it a how we look or where we start. It's almost like we did in rail. If you remember, we started out with a low on-time performance, and there's some things that we addressed to raise that performance level as well.
Good. Also, there's an appendix here that report some things for the 16 line and the Rex line. Could you speak to that? What is this? What's the point of including this? What's this telling us?
Well, the point of including it,
other than that your chairman takes the 16 line to get here, and Virginia around the corner takes the Rex line.
Yes. I didn't really want to mention that, but thank you for mentioning that, Mr. Chairman. That's one of the reasons why it is there. But it gave us an opportunity to take a look at those lines and start the communication with how we can improve the on-time performance. I know we've met with you and your staff, Mr. McKay, and you were involved in meetings back in October, and there's some things we're actually going to do in monitoring that, and that's what I was talking about earlier as far as what we're going to do from a reorganization standpoint and what we can do. We focus on those two lines And you've seen improvement on the 16, you will see an improvement on the Rex line. We have a plan that's going to go into effect, I believe, is March 30th. So we're going to sit down and have some discussion about that. And some of it is, we had the supervisors get out and ride the service. We look to maybe add some trains, I mean, not trains, add some buses in the service as well. And maybe actually looking at, can we in fact operate the schedule that we actually have out there? And take a real realistic look at it. If we can't, then we need to put the schedule out there that we can. Because our customers expect us to show up at certain times, and we need to be able to do that.
I noticed that, and I guess it should be pointed out in all fairness, the 16 and the Rex are the first two lines that got the treatment that we're now looking at rolling out. And on Monday, you're rolling out the 16th Street service here in the district. These were the first two, basically.
Those were the first two.
And you know, when I look at it, it appears that the 16 line performs at a higher level of reliability than the average that we saw in the, you know, the other slide. The Rex, on the other hand, is below that. Now, you know, so that's a perfectly good example of, you know, what I was talking about. But, I mean, I suspect that the 16 line does better in part because of the flow on Columbia Pike, and that the Rex is struggling with a different set of traffic conditions.
Yes.
But I also bet that my colleague from Fairfax would himself be able to tell you the specific points at which you lose time, because I think he knows it intimately.
I do.
And the point being just that, you know, maybe those are examples of where we can kind of identify the problems and figure out a strategy that engages the relevant agencies and jurisdictions to cope with it.
And, you know, I would add, too, one of the strong points is that we have and do go out and talk to the customers. What you just mentioned, Ms. McKay had a conversation with us about Rex and gave us input. And, you know, we took the input and went out and see if we could exactly do some of the things, and if some of the things that we could, we were able to implement, and some of the things that we think we can't or that we want to discuss making the changes, we were able to go back and discuss that as well. So that's why I was mentioning earlier that we do have a plan that we want to talk to you about, and hopefully that plan, when you see the on-time performance in the next couple of months, will at least start improving as well.
Mr. Richard,
you mind? Yes, we've been in discussion with Mr. McKay, and he's been very helpful in guiding us as to what should take place there. We've taken his suggestions. And one of the things that's going to happen come March 30th is that, well, to give a little bit of history, we've been increasing the service there because of overcrowding, but there are also certain points that were identified through Mr. McKay's help, that where there is the high traffic areas. And so what we've done is in those areas during the peak time, we've increased the running time by 5 minutes. And so so that it'll match a little bit better to what the traffic patterns are. And that'll start March 30th.
And, you know, that kind of adjustment, I understand, needs to be made from time to time. On the other hand, that's not an improvement in service. That's just a recognition. All we're doing is ratifying something. That,
exactly.
You know, we have to do that from time to time, but that's a short-term response to make our schedules, you know, appear right. The long-term thing should be, how do we get that time out of this?
Exactly, yeah. And what do we do with all that traffic? So.
Exactly. The other thing I'd like to ask you about, when we talk about rail time, on-time performance, what is the standard, Mr. Francis, for being on time?
Not to see the headway greater than 2 minute deviation.
In either direction?
Either direction.
You shouldn't be earlier or later than 2 minutes.
Correct.
To be on time. What is the standard we apply for bus on time performance?
Two minutes early and 7 minutes late.
2 minutes early and seven minutes late. Now, I'll point out a couple of things. One of which, that's a 9 minute gap as opposed to a 4 minute window that you apply for rail. So already, you can be a lot later with the bus, and we count you as on time. But if your bus is 7 minutes late on a trip in which you're taking a bus and a train and maybe transferring another time, especially if you just missed the bus before it, that's a long way. You're not on time at all. Secondly, whereas on the train, I don't really care whether it's 2 minutes early or whatever it is, partly because they're scheduled so tightly, I don't know when the train is due to come. I just know when's coming, because I don't ever have to wait more than, you know, 10 or 12 minutes, really, for the most part, on the train. On the bus, if a bus is 2 minutes early, that's really not acceptable. I mean, if I arrive at the bus stop on time, you know, and maybe even a minute early, there's really no excuse for the bus to have already gone, especially when It's not like another one is coming in 5 minutes, because that's the rare situation. We don't have much of that service. It's a good chance of not one coming in front of the half hour. In fact, that's what would matter to me. On a 16 line, such as I take this morning to get here, you know, it's not that big a deal, because I'm not waiting that long. But on most bus lines, you're going to be waiting a long time. And so, to some degree, that standard, I think, would need to be different if you're really trying to match it to, you know, customer needs. If we're on a route that is running on a 30 or 40 minute schedule, leaving a stop, you know, 1 minute early is really not acceptable, because you're completely ruining somebody's day if you do that. So, you know, I've always questioned this parameter anyway. I don't understand why it's long on one side, short on the other. But to be consistently 2 minutes early and still be considered on time, I don't think works. And 7 minutes late is pretty late. Now, again, I appreciate the fact that a lot of the reasons for being off schedule are things we don't directly control and shouldn't be viewed as necessarily criticisms of the bus service. They're really criticisms of the road system, and we need to focus on that. Nonetheless, we are, again, applying a different standard to bus than we apply to rail, with the assumption being you can run a lower level of service for the customer and have it meet a standard. I think we should be moving in another direction to say we want a high quality of standard, regardless of whether you're a bus rider or a rail patron. Ms. Benjamin.
As long as we're on that subject, what's the on-time performance for Metro Access?
I'm sorry?
What is the on-time performance for Metro Access? Look at the chart number.
You mean the standard?
Yeah, the standard.
Metro Access is 94%.
No, but what's the standard?
It's a 30-minute window.
And delivery?
I'm sorry?
And delivery is 60 minutes.
Yes.
That really sounds like a very low level of service. In other words, if I get you to where you want to go within an hour of when you were supposed to get there, that's on time?
It is. I agree. It's a standard, though, that's set by the FDA. There are measurements across the country. It's the same standards that we use. Part of the reason on that is, particularly with the access services, is that you pick up one person, and on that route you deviate and pick up someone else to maximize the performance, and that makes the first person's trip a little bit longer, and then the distance of the trips. Is that it is a long trip, but it's a service that's designed to pick up people from and drop them off door to door. And I wish it could be quicker. In some cases it is, in other cases it's a lot longer than an hour.
I'm just noting that on a practical basis, right, for the person who's having that service, they have to leave a half-hour window. They have,
yes,
to be ready 15 minutes before their scheduled pickup time, and then they have to count that whatever it is that is estimated to be their delivery time, they have to be there an hour before, or they have to have that estimate an hour before they actually need to be there. That's a heavy burden on those people.
I agree.
Thank you, Ms. Hudgens and Mr. McKay.
I just wanted to raise a point that we provide the input on the performance measurements here. There's an element here that we leave out, and that's the customer's complaint part. And I think we've had reports at intervals, but we've not had a consistency of the reports on customer service complaints. Because if we don't have any sense of how we're receiving them and what we're receiving them on, these measurements are kind of not consistent. And I'd like to find out how we could get some feedback on the customer complaint side. I think that would help us tremendously. And we'd kind of be able to hone in on some of this. What are the complaints that we're getting, and how are we handling them?
That's a good point.
Yeah, I was just going to agree with you, Chris. I agree entirely with your points about bus, but two things that weren't mentioned on-time performance is, if you're waiting on a bus in our jurisdiction, chances are you're standing outside, which makes matters particularly worse. And on top of that, you don't have a sign to look up at like you do in a station to tell you when the next bus is coming. So you're standing there without any idea when the next bus would come. And I would say the times I've waited 50 minutes for a Rex bus means the one that came before came too early, and the one that's coming after is coming way too late. And you never have an expectation to stand there for 50 minutes, and unfortunately, that's what happens only because there's no other information. You don't know what happened, and you're standing outside. So I think that has to be taken into consideration when we measure on-time performance. The conditions that we subject our customers to be in are very different than, obviously, when you're in a rail station. I will say, on a positive note, this morning the Rex was exactly on time in the rain. So I come in as a happy person today.
Well, since you mentioned the question about when the next bus is coming, can we again check on when do we go live?
For the next bus.
When? What's the schedule?
Oh, it's still scheduled for July. It has not changed.
Good. People keep asking me, and I keep saying that, and they're saying, is that still the schedule? Is that really going to happen? So I ask you every time.
Yes.
All right. We were talking about how good the rail on time was service was, but we just were joined by a colleague from Maryland who will tell you that that's not necessarily true on every train this morning. I think Ms. Hewlett has the last couple of times been held up by problems. There was the previous month was the Orange Line situation that held up Ms. Hudgens coming from the far west and Ms. Hewlett coming from the far east on the same line, and we had people delayed on both ends. So.
I did not have any problems, Mr.
And I did not have any problems on, okay.
On the red line. So good in red line morning, maybe not so good. Was it orange or blue?
Orange.
All right.
Now that I ride the yellow line to meetings, it's been a fun time.
That was my experience this morning also.
So see, my on-time performance is about 50%. I'll make a note of that.
The region. Of course, some people aren't here, so, you know. We'll see when they arrive. All right, I think if there are no other questions on operational performance, we'll move. We have one action item. It's a fairly minor thing, which is basically to reinstitute our technical review committee. It was an ad hoc committee, but per our new rules adopted for this year, we're creating this as a subcommittee. If there is no objection, I will, under the authority given the chairman under board procedure, item 7, section, is that section 3? It's not section 3, but it is procedure item 7 anyway. Under the relevant section, to designate a committee, and this would be the Committee on Technology Review, same charge as last year's ad hoc committee, that there would be a technology review committee to review, which shall review and provide policy guidance as appropriate as requested on technical issues related to customer service, such as fare collection systems and customer communications, and review of proposed plans for major expenditures by the authority for new technology as it relates to transit operations. This committee has been very helpful in the last year in dealing with issues such as our smart trip cards, fare media, things like that, and helpful in speeding our work. If there's no objection, then we will create that as a subcommittee. And hearing no objection, the committee is so created. The membership will be as it has been. Mr. McKay, who will be chair, Mr. Giancola, and Mr. Benjamin. Very good. That's item 4, and we can move to item 5. 5A is transit police crime statistics and significant facts. I'm particularly interested in the significant facts. I'm hoping that will be better news than the crime news. Good morning, Chief.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, other members of the committee. Again, the Metro Transit Police will be presenting crime statistics and significant facts. We did not have an opportunity to cover calendar year 2004 through 2008 and give you a final report for the year 2008. This is what, I guess the first slide will depict. We'll also cover for January, the first month of January. This is the first opportunity, again, that we've had to report on the final report of crime figures. As you can see, the categories where we did not see a reduction were in the areas of larceny and robberies. In 2008, larcenies was up by 17%, and again, the majority of the larcenies were in our parking facilities, as well as up 30% in the area of robberies. We've seen a tremendous increase in the robberies, and what we've been doing is educating our riding public. At least twice per month, we go out and hand out informational brochures that talks about how to safeguard yourself with respect to electronic devices, because that's the preponderance of those types of crimes that we've experienced with juvenile snatching, iPods, things of that nature. We also have a sticker that we can give to our customers so they can put on their item in the hopes of getting that back. We're also working with media relations to come up with a program to better inform our patrons with regards to robberies on the subways. Relative to calendar year 2009 so far in January, the robberies are down 29% based upon what they were last year for that particular month. Next slide. In response to the board's request in December, this slide breaks down where Part 1 crimes were committed during calendar years 2007 and 2008. We looked at whether or not the victims were affiliated with parking lots or they were actually in our stations. And you can see, again, that the preponderance of larcenies were committed in our parking lots in 2007. And we had robberies that sort of were tracking about 121 in the parking lot. So approximately 6% of our crime in the metro system were parking lot related crimes for 2007. And in 2008, approximately 50% of the crimes were committed in the parking lot.
Mr. Chairman?
Mayor.
Yeah, Chief, can you break, do you have a way of breaking down the parking lots further between parking lots and parking garages? Because, I mean,
we categorize parking lots, parking garages, all of the same. Any parking-related crimes.
But hold on. One would think that the opportunity for any type of activity would occur more readily in a parking garage than a parking lot, because a lot is more visible, open, lighted, whereas in a garage, you got multiple levels and, you know, tight parking spots. I mean, that's been the natural experience.
Yeah. I can give you those statistics a little later, but the preponderance of our parking spaces are outdoors, but I can give you that total breakdown.
It would be interesting to look at that. Of course, we'd have to take account again of that ratio, how much we have on surface lots versus structured parking, but probably you could adjust for that, and I think that's an interesting question. It would also be interesting to see if there's any data for that more generally outside of Metro, given all the parking we have. The vast quantities of parking we have in this region, in this country. At one count, I think it was 8 spaces for every car in the country, so that's a lot of spaces. Mr. Jinkle.
Chief, thank you for your report. I want to clarify something, and you may have told us this in the past, but I have forgotten. When, in fact, a assault on an individual occurs along with a robbery, do they get reported twice?
No, it's one before.
And is it the most serious offense that gets the
Absolutely. It would be the robbery.
The robbery is more serious than assault?
Absolutely.
Huh. I didn't realize that.
The second push you, that's assault.
Yeah.
We're talking about Part 1 crimes, those that are felonies, not the simple assault, the unlawful touching, but a more serious aggravated.
Well, how about somebody that's punched in the face?
That's a simple assault. That's the lesser of the charge. So we're reporting just Part 1 crimes, the more felonies.
Makes sense, everybody.
Yeah, you know, you're talking about assault with a deadly weapon, a gun, or stabbing. Those would rise to a crime of felony.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Want to move on?
Okay, the next slide. We were also asked to rank Part 1 crimes by jurisdictions. Again, this is depicting those non-vehicles versus vehicle crimes. You'll see in the Anacostias, again, preponderance of those crimes are crimes of robberies, but it also tracks to those locations that have parking facilities. In the state of Maryland, we have New Carrollton, which all of the crimes that were committed that were Part 1s were associated with vehicles. Suitland follows suit, and majority of those were also victims, but were also parking related. Next slide. We only depicted 4 stations in Virginia because that is all that we've tracked for Part 1 crimes in that particular jurisdiction.
Next there slide. Were only 5?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Or 6. I missed one column.
Excuse me. We had 4 stations that reported crimes, Part 1 crimes.
Mr. Chairman.
Number of crimes
Ms. McKay.
Just to be clear. Should we conclude from this slide that these were the only stations that had any incidents?
Absolutely. Part 1 crimes in Virginia.
Okay.
Don't close. Okay, yeah, don't close.
But these were in the station areas, that is, in
these
the
were both vehicle-related, non-vehicle, all-inclusive.
All-inclusive.
And so the probability of being a victim of Part 1 crime in the metro system, which we've given those statistics again, for calendar year 2009 so far is 2.27 per million customers. And in 2009, again, Metro Transit Police received 4,200 calls for services. We made over 153 arrests and issued over 400 criminal citations. One could also conclude that many of the crime statistics are the results of police officers going out, self-initiating arrests. And so we've had an increase of about 30% of arrests for calendar year 2009 so far. We also were asked at the previous board meeting to give a depiction of bus operators' assaults, and we tracked in 2007 there were 55 bus operators' assaults. 15, again, were of the aggravated type, which were the more serious felonies, and 40 were the lesser misdemeanor type. In 2008, there were 70 bus operators' assaults. Six of those were classified as felonies or aggravated assaults, and 64 were of the lesser misdemeanor type of assaults. And this next slide will further break down just to see in those aggravated assaults for 2007, we had 15 that were classified as felonies, and you can see rocks and bricks thrown to the front windshield. The other categories will depict whether or not there was arrest associated with those or an injury, and you can see in that instance there were four injuries in that particular case. We had four that utilized the display of a gun, four that displayed using a knife. And then as you go down to the simple assault, we had 20 that sort of spoke to touching, pushing, or hitting. We had the 15 that the operator was spat upon, and then some that threw food and beverage. In 2008, we've had six aggravated types of assaults, again displaying a knife or throwing a brick through the windshield. We also had one that threatened with a brake rotor. Those, again, were the more serious of those offenses. And in the simple assaults, again, we had roughly 24 that included touching, pushing, hitting, 15, again, that the bus operator was spat upon, several that they threw food, paper, things of that nature.
So, interestingly, from 2007 to 2008, the number of assaults on bus drivers went up pretty sharply, sheer numbers. On the other hand, the serious ones dropped.
Right, approximately 6% reduction in the seriousness.
These are not something, we haven't been tracking these for a lot of years, so we don't have a long period of data to compare it to. That may just be random.
Absolutely,
year-to-year kind of
and
thing.
We've been proactive in requesting from the bus operators to report any and all types of assaults. And so when we take an official police report, that is tracked.
But in a two-year period, that's 125 assaults on bus drivers.
Yes.
Swell.
And so that concludes my presentation today. Are there any questions?
Questions
for the chief? For the questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Just again, thank the chief for the report, but thank him and his department for the job well done. Your statistics and report, rather, in terms of, in comparison regionally, both for assaults and, robberies and larceny, and depicts what's happening throughout the whole Washington metropolitan region, particularly as the economy has continued to decline. So there's nothing new there, and really it's about education to the citizenry and encouraging them to be very vigilant in terms of watching their own personal properties, where they are, and so forth. We just had a report in my jurisdiction from our chief last week, and while we're seeing a slight uptick, but again, it's in these same two categories, but I think this also speaks to the general manager's efforts to really make this a very metro a very safe system, and commitment and dedication and the resources that have been employed there certainly have been refreshing. So thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mayor Yule. I think you speak for all of us in those remarks. Are we through with the chief? Thank you, sir.
Thanks very much.
Item 5B is our safety report.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So today, good morning. Today I'll be sharing with you the Safety Performance Indicators Report. Since we didn't have a committee meeting last month, on the chart, next slide, you'll see that it shows December and January for the same fiscal year. However, the information, just to give you some highlights, I'll be comparing last year versus this year for you. The number of rail passenger injuries, there was a decrease of 50%. for the number, this is for the month of December alone, for the number of rail transit facility occupants, there was a decrease of 75%. For the month of January, the same period, rail passenger injuries decreased by 44%, as well as rail transit facility occupants. There was a decrease of 55%. Next slide. Bus. So as for our bus safety performance indicators, for the month of December, we had a preventable collision rate of a decrease of 28%. So we've seen great improvement there, as well as for the number of passenger injuries and preventable bus rate, it was a reduction of 60% and a 46% reduction, respectively. As for Metro Access, the number of passenger injuries for the month of December and January, we had one person that was injured, and for both, respectively, one extra. For the actual collision rate, we have a 34% decrease for the month of December and an 18% decrease for the month of January. And that concludes our presentation.
Thank you. Question on the preventable bus versus non-preventable bus accidents.
Yes.
Don't let the lawyer hear me this question, but is basically preventable mean we think it was the driver's fault, and non-preventable it was somebody else's fault?
Yes.
I do not want Ms. O'Keefe to answer that question.
As for the preventables are based on the scenario of the accident. Yeah. So we're based on bus criteria, Milo can elaborate here. The specific criteria as to whether or not the bus operator themselves could have avoided the accident based on the scenario.
Because, not to be flip, I'm not asking the question of legal liability, which I understand is a very different question, which obviously the attorney would address, but you don't call it that, and I'm assuming that's part of the reason you call it preventable and not preventable. But that does sound like that's the basic idea. Preventable is what you want our bus driver to avoid happening. It doesn't just necessarily mean it may not have been the bus driver's fault, but
that's
you're really
right.
Looking at they could avoid something happening. You expect them to take certain actions to avoid it, and that's what you're trying to classify here.
That's correct.
Correct. As professional bus operators, we expect them to do everything possible and everything that we teach them during their training to avoid any kind of accident that someone who is not a professional operator otherwise may not have been able to prevent.
Non-preventable is basically, in your view, there's just nothing they could have done. That was beyond their control.
Right.
Okay. I guess that's also would be a category under reasons for bus on-time performance being down, which would be accidents as well. Okay. I'm sorry. Questions on the safety report? No? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Item 5C is the West Ox bus facility, which I believe is just getting ready to open.
Getting ready to open on March 30th.
This weekend, right?
Yep, on Monday morning. We are in the process of, we have been for the last month, of moving all our equipment and so on. And as of tomorrow morning, when the last bus leaves Arlington, it will not go back to that. So.
And Arlington Division doesn't operate on Saturday, right?
So does not operate on the weekends.
So today is the last day.
Tomorrow.
I'm sorry, tomorrow is the last day. That I guess I should stop by there. Say goodbye.
Your last time.
Yeah, it doesn't look very pretty right now. Everything's in real disarray.
But West Ox, on the other hand, looks fast, pretty.
So, So as you know, we've purchased we haven't purchased. We've been in partnership with the Fairfax County to develop this beautiful state-of-the-art facility, and as you can see by this depiction here, how beautiful it is, and it's going to serve the agency quite well. It encompasses, as it says, there are 130 acres, but 33 acres of that is dedicated as the facility itself. And it's located on the West Ox between Route 29 and Route 88, and it's going to provide the infrastructure needed to improve the efficiency in the Northern Virginia area, and in particularly in the Fairfax County area. Next slide. This picture doesn't do it any justice. It's this drawing. It's actually made up of several different buildings. And one is the service building where the buses will be cleaned, washed, fueled. The next one is the maintenance building where the repairs will be done. And the administration building where, as we go up to the next slides, you'll see how what is going to take place there. There are 300 spaces for parking that include 150 for expansion. Currently, we're actually going to have 105 buses rather than 100 because of the 9, 12, and 20s that are supposed to go to the Fairfax connector. But there's been a delay in that, and so that won't happen until July. And then we'll reduce our buses that are at that division, and the Fairfax connector will take over. What you see there are the WMATA side of the maintenance building. If you were to look on the left side, if you were to look to the left, there would be the Fairfax connector. And you can see the type of modern equipment that's there for the maintenance of our buses. See how many lifts there are. Next slide. And now if you were looking to the left, then you'll see that there are 7 maintenance bays dedicated to the connector. And so we will be sharing the facility. Our employees will be working on one side, and the Fairfax connector employees will be working on the left side. That's kind of a new concept, but we've been in constant communication with Fairfax on how this is going to work, and we're expecting that it'll be a good mix. That one is the administration building, and that is going to house not only where the operators will congregate, the operators' lounge, and where they will receive their assignments, but you can also see that there'll be some other public things going on there. You see the Office of Emergency Management will be there, State Police with some dispatchers, and as well as the Safety Communications and the 911 call center will be located there as well. Next slide. The facility itself cost $70 million to build, and our share of it was half, and it was designed and constructed and owned by the Fairfax County. We do have a joint use agreement for 75 years. Initially, we wanted 99 years. The Fairfax wanted 50 years, so we agreed somewhere in the middle. And the operating cost, which is about $5.4 million, will be shared. And we'll also share in the infrastructure renewal at some point. This is the schedule of how things are taking place during the last during this month, actually. And you can see that we're moving all the equipment, all the tools, parts, and so on. We're relocating the storeroom, setting up the offices throughout the month. And come Monday morning, our first bus will roll out of there. And by the way, I don't know if you had a chance to look at our new buses sitting outside. These are the new Flyer buses, and you can see the three different types that we have. We have an express bus out there, which is the blue and white, which will be used for the 16th Street, yes, 9 line, come Monday as well. And then you'll also see the new articulated bus. We'll be receiving 22 of those from New Flyer. And the last bus is the 42-foot hybrid local service bus. So when you get a chance, take a look at them. They're really beautiful buses. And we have 7 on site right now and 5 on the way in the middle of somewhere near West Virginia, I think, today. So they're on the way. Next slide. That's it. Any questions, comments?
Mr. Chairman, I should know this, but green build initiatives and lead, or no? Green initiatives and lead?
Yes. Mr. Couch, yes.
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 What level lead?
Washing.
Silver? Yeah. Thank you.
Ms. Hudgens and Mr. Graham.
Well, I just wanted to thank you, and I think what this really represents is, I think, a shift in terms of the co-location, as well as as you look at the site, it provides both organizations an expansion of operational training and other work within that facility. It's really an excellent way for us to look at trying to better utilize our revenue, and also to utilize the space for both of the organizations to help support and train the drivers out there. It looks very large, and it is large, but as you think about, one, the opportunity for expansion, but also the opportunity for training, something that was an experience that I didn't think about as we got out there.
Exactly.
The Fairfax facility that some of these buses will move from in our location don't have that kind of service available to them, and this is going to make a big difference for both
exactly,
of our organizations.
Yeah. We're very proud of the the facility itself, and expect we, as well as the Fairfax, will take very good care of it.
Mr. Graham.
Thank you. What's the capacity of this bus garage?
300.
300. And what was the total cost?
The total cost was $70 million.
And can you explain to me why this particular bus garage with a capacity of 300 buses costs so much less than what we are projecting to spend for the replacement for the Southeastern bus garage?
I cannot. Maybe somebody here at the couch might be able to.
The facility is built as a shared facility for 150 buses. It is expandable eventually to be 300 buses, so it is not that cost for a 300 bus facility.
But how much is it? How much are we projecting to spend on the replacement facility for the Southeastern bus garage? This comes before us today, and we have it's just about $100 million that is identified in the proposal today.
But what the portion that we'd be looking at today is for a rebuild of the Southern Avenue garage in a larger capacity. It would be 215 to 218 buses. The majority of that site would be on property that we currently own. So there's a mix and a match that's in the pricing, because some of the pricing that was there for Fairfax had land cost in it. Some of it was building. I would have to get back and separate the components, which I can do.
Well, I mean, what the materials indicate is that currently Southern has 103 bus capacity, and under the proposal that's coming before us today, it would increase to 220. Okay, still less than the bus proposal that we have at Westox.
It's not less; it's more. Right?
Yeah.
It's more. Westox is 150.
I mean, excuse me, still much more, excuse me, much more. Then thank you very much. I need all the help I can get these things. 180 degree turn. Much more than what it costs at Westox. I mean, maybe you don't have this analysis at the tip of your fingers right now, but if I may ask the general manager to provide this analysis, because there's been a lot of questioning about. And this may be, there may be clear justification, I'm not saying there may not be, but there's been a lot of questioning about the very high costs associated with the replacement of the Southeastern bus garage. And in the District of Columbia, we're trying to understand just why it's so high. And this brings those issues to mind. So if you could just provide us with an analysis, again, I would appreciate it.
Mr. Grimm, it is 40% or so more buses, right, that we're talking about.
The comparable numbers in gross terms, and you have to be careful of how you look at the land, it's 150 buses for $70 million at Westox,
right,
and 220 buses for a projection of $100 million for the combined Southern and Southeast. They're almost comparable, but I have to be careful what I do and how I look at that in terms of the land cost, and that's something I'd have to get back to.
And the new building construction, which is Westox, is entirely a new.
Yeah.
I just want to, we don't have to delve into this today, but I'd like to see a clearer analysis of all of this.
Well, it looks like it's going to, I mean, and that's fine, and you should see that, of course. It sounds like it's about a third more cost, and it's a third or more bus capacity, too.
I thought that Fairfax had 100.
Right, and this one's going to have 220.
Right, but 150 and 150 where I went to school is 300.
But we have expansion.
But the total cost...
They built a facility for 150 total.
That makes sense.
That's what's confusing.
I didn't mean this to be our analysis. I'd like them...
Yes.
Mr.
Grimphone, we will do that. One of the other major expenses is where there's a bus garage at the Southern Avenue site, because we do not have the amount of land that you have in Fairfax to be able to have a flat parking area. But we will get together and give you the breakdown of the cost.
No, and I was just going to say, I think the land, the cost of the land was different based upon how we acquired the site in Fairfax County, and that does reduce some of that cost.
In fact, the land is all part of a major Fairfax facility.
Right.
It includes police, includes the state police have a presence there as well.
Yes, state police, everybody that's in transportation and public safety are all in the same
facility in many ways.
And it was formerly owned by the state, and the agreement became a shared use of that land.
I had the opportunity to be present at the unveiling ribbon cutting for that last fall, at which time I also got a chance to tour this, which was still under construction, but you know, a good part of the way done. And Ms. Francis and I, we went through it. And I have to say, I mean, the overall facility that Fairfax has done there is very interesting. But the bus facility itself was especially impressive. And if you visited our bus facilities, number one, you can see having a new facility. I think our people are really going to like it when mm-hmm. you get in there.
Well, let me just say,
a lot of advantages.
Let me just say, Mr. Chairman, I don't have any, I have nothing but kudos for the facility. I'm more interested in seeing just... watching the costs associated with that.
Naturally, I wasn't responding to you.
I thought we had finished all the food off.
But I think that it is a good example of something. Well, it's not really an example because it's the only one we've done so far, but it is important because it's the first time that we've had this kind of partnership. And, you know, I think that given the constraints on resources, the fact that we were able to get a partnership between this regional agency and a major jurisdiction to go in on something is whatever the cost turned out to be. You know, we got the economies of scale of doing twice the facility we would have done, you know, for the half we need. And the way, as I went through it, I mean, I saw how it's divided so that both systems will be able to operate appropriately on the administrative side, bus maintenance, you know, parts, the whole system for maintaining parts inventories, you know, separate where it needs to be, but with the benefits of shared facilities as well. And I thought it was quite innovative, very impressive in many ways. And I did want to acknowledge that this probably would never have happened without our former colleague's work, mm-hmm. Kate Hanley, who served here for many years and was chairman of the Board of Supervisors, now Secretary of the Commonwealth in Virginia. And you know, many years ago when we were looking to deal, what we do with, we had three old facilities, two of them that clearly were going to need to be replaced. And for a lot of years, nothing happened on it. I mean, it's just a similar situation in the district with a lot of frustration in getting something done about aging bus facilities. And you know, Ms. Hanley had a lot to do with saying, we've got the site, we do something joint because we need something connector too. And I think that's something that we can be very proud of. I also think it's worth taking a visit to. Now, about a month ago, I took a visit to Northern Garage in the District of Columbia. And, you know, in a sense, that's the other end, because that's like a 100-year-old building that was originally built for the old trolleys and has been, you know, was converted to buses a couple of generations ago, has been added on here and patched up there. And some aspects of the building are quite magnificent, you know, from its age, but mostly what you have is a lot of stuff that's patchwork. And if you walk into the garage there, you can see the sky through the roof. You know, it's enclosed being where it is, but I'm told that when it rains, it pours rain into the facility. And, you know, that's an example of what we need to deal with and part of the issue with our capital budget, because these things, you know, are not good either for the provision of service for our customers or for the working conditions for, you know, the people that keep those buses on the road. So there is quite a variation. In Virginia now, we've made some progress with 4 Mile having been at least partly upgraded. We have three facilities in Northern Virginia. Up to now, two of them have been Arlington, one in Alexandria. 4 Mile, which is the largest facility, which has about two-thirds of the Virginia fleet, has been partially upgraded but could still use some work. Arlington Division, which is, you know, too small and kind of a mess, will now be retired and replaced with this wonderful facility. We still have Royal Street in Alexandria, which needs to be replaced, and I know I hope there'll be an opportunity, as I know my colleagues are interested in pursuing something like this for the other end of the region on the Virginia side, and you know, having the benefits that we've seen here. Anything further? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good luck with the new launch, Ms. Victoria. And I believe that concludes the business for this committee.
One more thing, Mr. Victoria, I did look at you.
Sorry.
I did look at the buses outside that you asked us to look at, and they really are impressive. So, yes.
We'll have, before the end of the year, 203. So that's great.
And what time is the event on Monday?
We have one event on Monday, which is
on
the 16th Street, yeah. And that is at...
And where will that be?
16th and Columbia.
16th and Columbia.
Perfect.
For those who want to join Mr. Graham for the launch of our latest improved bus service.
It's a good service.
I think we should. Can I just ask something on that? That's a wonderful thing also. Do we have the route and everything up on our website? Is that part of our system?
Yes.
It's all up and clearly identified. Is it announced specifically on the website?
Yes.
I know we've done other announcements. It's on the website. Yes.
And here is, I guess this is a postcard, and it shows the route very clearly. All right. I think that does it for this committee. We'll be going directly, I assume, into finance?
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll adjourn this one.